Good afternoon, Paul Hawksby, Charlie Baker here on Talk Sport. Later on, we will be chatting all manner of things.
All sorts is coming up, Paul.
A lot of stuff getting you involved in this afternoon. We'll bring you the best of that. But before all of that, we'll be chatting about a new book, The Greatest American Football Story That Has Never Been Told, How Gridiron Stopped the War. Anthony Wooten is the author. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Nice to see you. You know each other from the past,
yeah,
no, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. The old days. Yes. I know Anthony from. We've worked together in the past. Very nice to see him. In radio,
Right.
Very nice to see him.
So, yeah, this takes us back to the Second World War, Anthony, doesn't it? And the Canadian-American forces and how a kind of drunken conversation turned into a couple of quite big games.
Naturally, that's how things happen, isn't it? Yeah. So it's the main protagonist in the book is a guy called Dennis Whittaker. He went on to become the Brigadier General of Canada. He was a major at the time, and he served in Dieppe, and he was actually the highest ranking officer to escape Dieppe unscathed.
Yeah.
And he was debriefed after that, and he gave Mountbatten what for, and his thoughts on that, because it was a real slaughter of Canadian troops out there on the beach in Dieppe, really badly planned. So he'd experienced war at its worst, and they were preparing for Operation Overlord, which was D-Day, during the winter of 1943 into 1944. And he was granted a weekend's leave. It was a cold, wet winter, and he was in the Hampshire countryside training. And on his leave, he went to London, and he went to a pub, and he sat down in the pub, and he was having a few beers, and he got talking to an American. So Dennis Whittaker, by the way, he was a professional Canadian Football League player, so not the NFL, but the CFL. So he was a quarterback. So, you know, he's a pro, he's an all-pro before the war. And they got talking, and this American said, "I've got enough football equipment to field six teams." And that sparked a light bulb moment for Dennis Whittaker. So he went to the powers that be and persuaded them to put on these games. Well, initially this game, which was played on the 13th of February, 1944. The Canadians were granted 6 weeks leave from training to train for this game against the Yanks. And there was a whole all-pro lineup of Canadian Football League players over here. So it was Avengers Assemble, and they did, and they took on the Yanks in front of 30,000 fans with the Spitfires flying over White City Stadium, the old White City Stadium.
Yeah.
I say fans, spectators there. The Spitfires were flying overhead because there were so many high-ranking military personnel in the stadium. So if the Luftwaffe were to attack the stadium, there'd be quite a few people taken out. The Canadians, they played one half American rules, one half Canadian rules. So,
do they differ greatly? I was reading that in the book. Do they differ greatly, the rules?
Yeah, it's similar to rugby league, rugby union. So the Canadian Football League, it's 12 on 12. There's an extra 5 yards on the field. So it's 105 yards, essentially. Deeper end zones as well. And they have fewer downs. So they have bigger balls and fewer downs. So three downs as opposed to the NFL's four. And of course, some of the rules are different as well. So they played the first half in the NFL American football rules. The Canadians held them to a scoreless half that first half, and then they came out. The Yanks were befuddled by what was going on, and the Canadians won.
Wow.
And there was a book running, so the Americans ran a book in the stands, and they gave no chance to the Canadians. So all the Canadian troops put their money on. They earned so much less than the Americans, and they made more on the gambling that day than they did in the whole year, probably the whole war as well.
Yeah. What sort of state were the men in? I mean, if this was during the war, what sort of state fit were they?
There was a lot of boredom at that point because the Americans had come over in 1942, and a lot of them were promised this great adventure, and they were still waiting. They were waiting for that invasion of Normandy. So there was a lot of training and just sitting around, bored. And that was also a morale boost for them because it gave them something to focus on. Some of the Canadians, as I said, you know, had experienced Dieppe and gone off to Italy and what have you. So, but again, it was at that point, it was very cold, very wet. They were very bored.
Yeah.
So it just gave them something to focus on and work as a team. You know, there's a lot of nuances between the armed forces and American football, you know, the NFL. And the book looks at that. It looks at the relationship between the NFL and the military. Mm. So, you know, it allowed them to work as a unit, as a bond. And if you think of some of the terminology, blitz, air raid attack, all that kind of stuff is on the gridiron. And that's essentially what they had here.
I suppose it would have been there as a morale booster for American and Canadian service people. But the Brits that went along were a bit nonplussed. You see, there's a newspaper report, but they really don't know what to make of it as a game.
That's right, yeah. The Associated Press, there's a chap he spoke to, a couple of lads. One of them was called Les. Can't remember the name of the other one off the top of my head, but they were chatting to him at the pub, and they acquired tickets for the game, and they were asked their thoughts on it. And I guess it's kind of giving somebody tickets to an NFL game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium or Wembley who doesn't really know the rules. And it's the same old, it's a bit stop-start, won't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not got the finesse of football. It won't overtake football as a sport. But it was interesting. And they liked the Canadian version of it because there was a bit more going on. They had fewer downs, so I guess the plays were constantly cycling over and over. So, yeah, they were a little bit confused, but they loved their football. And I think if you were to sit down with new, fresh fans coming out of Wembley or Tottenham, they'd probably say, well, it's not a Champions League, is it?
Yeah. But they didn't do this once. They played the T-Bowl, and then a month or two later, they played again in the same place, the Coffee Bowl.
80 years ago, this very day,
okay.
White City Stadium, in front of 50,000 spectators.
So it didn't put people off. I suppose people were just looking for something else to do other than talk about the war, I suppose. Mm.
That's right. And you come together as one. And there's an effervescence, isn't there, in stadiums as fans, you all come together and united to cheer on your team. So it brought that morale boost to people, the spectators watching those games. But the Yanks, they wanted that revenge. They wanted the rematch. And there's a few of the Canadians who were reluctant to play in that game. There's one, Jeff Nicklin, who was an all-pro. He was a real superstar running back for his team, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And he scored a touchdown in the T-Bowl game, the first game. But he was reluctant to play. And I've got memos in the book from some of the high-ranking officers who were demanding that he played, but he didn't, because he didn't want to risk himself, because we're less than 12 weeks away then from D-Day.
Yeah.
He wanted to be primed for that. But the Yanks, they drafted in some ringers, and there's a comment in the book from one of the Canadians involved, and he said, I was stood up as it got this guy. It was March. He got a suntan. There was guys who were brought in from Hawaii, and there was a quarterback from the Philadelphia Eagles who was the quarterback for the Eagles for their first ever NFL championship. And he absolutely...
The real deal, yeah.
He was, this guy called Tommy Thompson. He played blind in one eye, but he won two championships for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he single-handedly beat the Canadians. They won the Americans 18-0. They were well-prepared for the second game.
Was there plenty of documentary evidence? Because obviously finding people still alive now, those that came through the war, and one of the protagonists in the book, sadly, is killed in action after the game. So, I mean, actually finding people to talk about it, was that difficult?
It was one of those where my wife goes to bed in the evening and I'm you're just an investigative journalist. You're contacting funeral directors to put you in touch with family members. And that's initially how it happened. And you start branching out these family trees and then finding who you can reach out to, and through social media, through funeral directors and on all sorts of different avenues, also getting in touch with the comms teams at their respective clubs, the CFL teams and the NFL teams. I managed to get in touch with these family members, nieces, daughters, granddaughters, you name it. And the family of Dennis Whitaker, the main protagonist, they were fantastic, because Dennis had been working on telling the story back in 1996, and she sent me his notes.
Wow.
She said, great. Here are his notes. So a lot of the quotes were from these notes that hadn't seen the light of day. And his
daughter...
They
must be chuffed that now they've got this wonderful document, all these family
members. They absolutely love it. Yeah, there's one guy, an American, in the book, Basil Russ. Not Basil Brush, but Basil Russ.
Boom, boom.
And I spoke to his daughter as recently as November, and she burst out in tears just telling this story because he wasn't an NFL player, but he was good at high school, and he was approached by colleges, but he served in the war. He went home. He was a military police officer by Buckingham Palace, and he was one of five brothers who served, and they all went home. One got shot in the head, but he lived with a metal plate in his head. But as military police officer, he had to deal with one brother who was a little bit disorderly in a pub near Buckingham Palace. But he was really reluctant to play in the games, and he'd always been the one family first, and he put his family before everything, and he could have had this football career. And I promised her, I said, look, I'm going to do him justice in this book, and They're absolutely over the moon with it. The response has been great.
So a real labour of love then, putting this together from your point of view.
It's been years in the making.
And how did you first hear about these games? Who sort of alerted you to? Because you're obviously an NFL fan, I take it.
Yeah, well, through my fan of American football and speaking to... it actually came about, I was researching, it was when Greenham Common Air Base, as it formerly was... Mm.
There was the 25th anniversary of that being handed back, the common land being handed back to the people of Newbury. And at this place where I was working before, I was researching this. I thought, I've got this great story.
Yeah.
And I discovered it by talking to the former head coach of the Farnham Knights, a British amateur American Football League team. And as you do when you interview people, how do you get into the game? And he told me, well, I used to watch it. I used to go into the air base at Greenham, the US Air Force Base. You know, the nuclear silos were there. You know, and they drive on the other side of the road. They pay for things in dollars. And we sat. It was like a Hollywood film on the set of these bleachers watching American football. So I was researching the growth of that team that formed. And then whilst, you know, Googling American football games, London, US Air Force, stumbled across this one little article about the T-ball. And I reached out to the guy who wrote it in Canada. And I got more names, and then that's when the research really began. I went over to Canada, spoke to the chap who wrote that initial article, met the family members of some of the Canadians, went down to Pittsburgh and then to Canton, Ohio, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is, and did my research. There's a photograph in the book of the championship ring of Tommy Thompson, and sat down with the guys involved there at the Pro Football Hall of Fame and just gathered all these stories, and it's been years and years in the making.
Yeah,
brilliant. Well, you must be
often when a story has never been told, there's a reason.
Yeah,
but this is a good one.
This is
so
interesting.
I highly recommend the book.
There could be film rights involved.
Yes.
You cast it in your head.
Thank you.
Cast it in your head.
I'm always thinking.
You've got to, haven't you? I mean, we've just had Masters of the Skies. Tom Hanks will like this.
Good.
Send it to Tom.
George Clooney lives in the area.
He's just down the river from me, or upstream.
I'm going to see George.
I can see Charlie as
Charlie's he's got the tash. He'll be some snotty RAF bloke who doesn't like American football.
American what?
Keep it on the floor. Handball. This is boring.
Keep handballing. That's not a tackle. Yellow card.
Yeah. Didn't have yellow cards.
No yellow card.
This is not good for content. Remember doing continuity.
Flag him.
Red card. Orange card. Well, Anthony, lovely to see you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We wish you well with the book. The greatest American football story that has never been told, How Gridiron Stopped the War, published by Pitch, and is out now. Thanks for popping in.
Nice one. Thanks.